Forgotten Tide, December 21st, 2023. Jazzy opening for all the Avid fans here. One of the last BroPod episodes of the year. Avid fans of the program.
Oh, I thought you were naming a band that is named Avid.
No.
That I was unaware of.
Nope. Not ABBA and not Avicii.
Who?
Just Avid.
Is Avicii a band?
Avicii is a EDM DJ. Todd, let's start with something completely different than anything we've been talking about for the first 40 seconds.
What's that?
Would you fucking listen? It's a podcast. You talk. God damn.
We've been doing this for like 27 years, and we still talk over each other occasionally.
No, basically, when I'm
being funny and you're...
You talk over me, and you don't listen. I can talk over you sometimes. I can still hear what you're saying. All right, Todd's pounding a DC. That's good. I'll shut up for 1 second. Anyway.
DC pound.
Todd, earlier today... I could go so many different directions with that. Earlier today,
sure.
The wife went to pick up the kid from the school. I said,
"Mike,
it's almost the holidays." The wife did.
Oh,
holy
the wife.
Fuck!
Sorry.
Can you not hear me?
Your sound is sort of cutting in and out.
Okay, let's try this. Is
Carry
that
on.
Better?
Yes, that's much better.
The
your
wife,
stupid fucking hoodie,
went to pick up the kid from the school.
Yes.
I said,
check.
Since I'm essentially done with work for the year, I'm going to go kick a beat on the fucking drum set downstairs. So I did. I decided I was going to play along, kind of. That's one reaction or one side effect, Flotsam and Jetsam. I decided I was going to play along with the old Quadliacha discography, which I recently discovered is on Spotify. As I believe you know, I don't think it's been there for a very long time. I used to have
Is
to listen
Band
to that
Camp
discography.
Well?
Probably. But there was some website that I used to have to listen to, like the Ben Burton Park songs and that EP and everything. Anyway, here's the point. What's the point? Here's the point. I don't know when the last time was that you listened to Quadliacha, Todd.
It's been a while.
Probably been a minute, but as an old man playing along with Quadliacha, first of all, I was not surprised at my ability
to
immediately...
What's the really good song called?
Ken Squirrel? Might be what you're thinking of. What's the really good song? I don't know. 80% of them sound exactly the same.
No, they have like one banger song.
I have no idea. Who Are You, the Devil? That's one of my personal favorites. It's like emo and hardcore
no
at the same time.
Oh,
okay.
I'll listen in the background.
Anyway,
you know.
Yeah, that's great. That'll help with the your ability to pay attention to what the fuck I'm saying. The point is exhausting. I played for like 45 minutes. My hands are all blistered up. My legs are tired because it's just constant. Just fun as shit. Don't get me wrong. And then when I finished with that album, I was like, let me do another throwback. Put on the old Shyster album. Played a couple Shyster tunes. I know you haven't listened to Shyster in a long time either. You should listen to that. It's so fucking good, man. I know I always liked it, but Four Uncle is the name of the album.
I don't know if I ever really listened to the album. I just listened to that one 7-inch. I have listened to it
the Shyster 7-inch.
Relatively recently.
So good. And that one's they're faster than I remember too. Like they're a true punk band. But
it's
more opportunities
it's just beats
to kind
per
of,
minute for you that crosses the threshold.
It really is at this point. That's what made me think of this because I said EDM and I was like, "Oh, let me tell about the playing drums." But man, that's good times. And it's again, I was proud of myself and kind of surprised at how much it just immediately it all came back to me. Like fills on the drums and everything. Again, Quadliacha, there's not much to
I was
it,
like, hold on a second. All came back to you.
Not the Quadliacha.
How hard is that?
But still,
remember?
You know, there are times when you stop and clench. And
Yeah, I know. And did you say clench?
Clench. The cymbals, not your asshole.
Also? Oh, sorry.
God, you are such a one-track mind. I mean, you can clench your sphincter if you want to, but it's not necessary to play the part.
I mean, I've never played the drums, not successfully anyway, so I don't know what kind of clenching you need to do.
You've attempted. But you failed. Todd, I never do this. But just so we can get it out of the way, can we talk about... I want your opinion on the importance of the in-season tournament. And, of course, we can't talk about it without mentioning the winner of the in-season. The inaugural in-season tournament, my Los Angeles Lakers. Congratulations to them.
Yes. Huge congratulations.
What do you think about it?
They hung another title.
Another banner.
They hung, along with the titles that don't really belong to them, the Minnesota titles, they've hung a banner for the in-season tournament. I liked it until the Lakers won. That's all I can say. Then now I'm like, whoop-de-fucking-do. Who cares?
I want you to comment on two things. One, the overall success. Do you think it brought attention to basketball at a time when football, college football is peaking? And then two, the fact that the semifinal game for the Lakers was unwatchable because they destroyed the Pelicans. And if that actually has a leaves a little sour taste in the mouth of the commissioner and other people that are counting on the successor. Go. So I mean,
in point, I'll reverse order your questions. Point two, I don't think so, because I think the final game, and I didn't watch all of it. I watched some of it.
It was very competitive.
Was more competitive, and obviously the Pacers feel good story, the Lakers, whatever. They have a lot of stupid fans, so who cares? But what was your first question? Oh, did it bring attention? It's hard for me to say. I think so, but I'm also listening to basketball podcasts mostly cover it who care about this basketball more. But I think, I think there was more attention paid there, whether it's just people being like, what the fuck has happened to the painted courts?
Big failure there.
Just people. I don't know if it's the inaugural year. But I think it could just be a gimmick. Will it last again next year? I don't know. I still think it's weird how it's like they just picked games in the regular season and that's the in-season tournament. Other than the semis or the quarters where only the in-season tournament teams played.
The quarters, yeah.
The round robin shit or whatever in the beginning seems relatively random. I think there are ways they could make
they're
that
just
more...
other games.
What'd you say?
It's just another game. Like this, the five or six games.
Yeah, yeah. It counts towards a regular season. And I don't think they should fully pull out all the teams and do that either. So I'm not sure what the solution is. I heard some. I can't remember now because it's been a little while what people were suggesting. But, I think somebody was saying maybe just do it by division. Like that's your... I think they tried to make it more competitive than that, but I don't know. Like, I feel like the divisions are relatively competitive. And then, like, have an East and West conference, which they did do, go to the finals. I mean, similar to the NBA finals. So, I think there are tweaks, but I think overall it was a pretty big success. I mean, clearly the Pacers cared about it because after they lost that game, they've, like... lost a shit ton of games. Like they really pushed for that $500,000 probably because they don't have any LeBrons making like billions of dollars that don't need it. I think it's nice to see a team that the money actually means something to them make it at least to the final game.
Hang on. Don't pigeonhole everybody. You read the stories about the Castletons and the Fudges and guys on the Lakers who are making less than what they got paid for that one tournament. Yeah, LeBron doesn't care. AD doesn't care. I get it. There are plenty of guys on the team that care about the half million they got.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, for sure. The end of the bench guys, they all get half million.
My point was...
Which is great.
My point was many of the players on the Pacers, that $250,000 that they made, or potentially $500,000, is a much bigger boon to them than... the majority of the Lakers top eight or whatever.
Sure. Maybe. Yeah. So you think they will do it again next year? And do you also think do this stupid fucking painting of the floors?
I mean, I don't mind terrible. That. Some of them were a little, a lot intense. Maybe they tone it down a little bit.
I mean, we talked about this.
Like that it's an easy visual reference. Yeah. You're like, oh, this is an, I mean, at least next year, this season, you're probably like, what the fuck is going on with the floors? Did they like, are they sponsored by Benjamin Moore or something where they just paid as much as they could to like paint them? I know it's not paint, probably it's vinyl, but you know what my point. It's a clear visual distinction that's easy to recognize from the jump. Also, it always like the Brooklyn floor that's gray. Any of the when it's like blue or some shit, it looks like they're playing a goddamn video game. It's so weird to my brain; it can't process it.
Yeah, I don't like the regular Brooklyn floor. It fucks with me. So,
what are you eating?
Two things. It's a rice bowl. It's barbecue pork and pineapple rice. I'm pretty much done. Two things. The floor, aside from looking terrible, I heard it was very slippery and like there were a lot of injuries or near injuries of guys slipping on the paint. So
it's got to be bullshit.
Possibly. I hear what you say.
They have painted keys or whatever all year long, so I'm calling bullshit on people slipping on the graphics.
Fine. But to your point about making it easily identifiable as an in-season tournament game, just do something at the half court. Like put a bracket at the half court. And then the majority of the playing space is fine, is untouched. We don't need these hideous fucking...
I don't mind the courts. Stupid. Some of them are too much, but if you just put something at the middle, people won't. It's not the same visual punch that you get from doing the whole court in the wackadoodle Ronald McDonald colors.
Here's the other thing, though.
It's only
in my opinion
10 games or something. Who cares? I mean, it's not even for each team.
Yeah,
it's five games or something.
Yeah, five games for 30 teams, 150 games.
I know, but you're not watching all those games. The fuck do you care?
No, and that's the point I was about to make. You're saying like, oh, it needs to be so that you can it's easily identifiable. Why? No one's flipping around from one NBA. I mean, very, very few people are flipping around from one NBA channel to another, watching games all night long, unless you're Haralabob.
No, I'm like saying it's nice to have it easily identifiable so then you can build some like awareness of the in-season tournament because most people don't know the in-season tournament exists or casual fans.
That's the NBA. That's their... The onus is on them.
They want people to know that exists and there's a reason to watch the early season. That's the whole point of it.
I mean, I guess we are talking about on this podcast.
If you're like, hey, the court looks insane, what's happening? And you're like, oh, it's the in-season tournament. You're like, oh, that's cool. What is that? It's a regular game.
Insane.
Oh, what?
Right. What the fuck are you talking about?
But it counts towards this other thing that there'll be some non-regular games.
By the way, since you mentioned that, I also heard that all the stats counted except the final game. Did you hear
that? Yeah, because all the games except for the final game are one of their 82 games. The final game is just nothing. It's like the play-in game. It doesn't count for anything stat-wise. Actually, I think the play-in games might count in playoff stats, but
I think it does, but does it count towards career stats? Like are those do those
I don't think so cuz it's not a regular season game.
So it's like an exhibition essentially.
I don't know. I mean, who cares? I guess. I mean, if LeBron, if LeBron scored 40 points there and he's the highest scorer ever by 40 points, then you can have a debate because he got to play an extra game. I mean, he's already played more minutes probably than almost anyone.
In 250 extra games because of playoff experience. Yeah. Okay. We'll see. We'll see the impact that it has. I did read like a winners losers column on, I think, ESPN talking about the play-in tournament. The courts were definitely one of the losers. Lakers and Pacers were both winners. I think it was just Tyler Halliburton specifically was a winner.
Yeah, he definitely was a winner.
Here's this near all-star guy who a lot of people just didn't know because he plays for Indiana, but he had a breakout tournament on a national stage, and now people know his name. And he was the reason that game was close. I was like, would you fucking foul him out or something, like injure him? I never wish injury upon anyone, but he was really getting my fucking nerves, getting all the calls too. Anyway. All right. So I wanted to start with that. Just cover that. That happened, I think it was December 8th, I want to say. It was a couple weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. So that was exciting. Todd, do you want to do the Seinfeld thing now? I have one other topic, but it's Christmas related. I thought I'd save that for closer to the end of the show.
Sure.
Tease it.
I've been through 12 songs of the Quadliacha discography, and I've not hit the song that is the banger that I can't remember.
Man.
I'll recognize it when I hear it, so I'll let you know the name of it when I get to it.
How's it go? Just sing it.
I don't remember. I just remember, I sort of have a vague idea of what it sounds like because the guy has a pretty distinctive voice.
He definitely does. Did you ever see them live?
Maybe. Probably.
Okay.
I mean, I went to a fair number of shows in Atlanta in my college days, so I feel like I saw them.
Sure.
But I don't recall a specific show.
Gotcha. Yeah. I wish I had, obviously. But I never saw them. But they're fucking good, man. Shout out to Quadliacha. The band.
The song that I'm listening to now is pretty good, but this isn't the one.
Is it Ken Squirrel?
No, it's called Think About It.
Oh, Think About It, yeah.
Oh, this is it. It Happens. I remember the fucking guitar riff. No.
Not that one? Okay. Oh. Yeah. I seen the good, I seen the bad. That song?
Yeah, that song.
I'm sick of everything we had in the way from me. If I think about it, I'll put that.
I don't know why I love this song, but this is my favorite song of theirs.
I was going to say, I think that song has some points. I'm sick of everything we had in the way. Yeah, it does.
It does have some clenches.
Yeah, that's a good. That is it. I mean, they're all good. No, they're not all good. Most of them are good. That is one of the top ones.
Oh, this part goes. It's pretty. I don't know what he says, but he does like a little bit of a.
He rolls
in the middle.
Yeah.
Which I would say, in a negative way, sort of sounds like Red Hot Chili Peppers. But when he does it, it sounds fucking awesome. Does it sound like Anthony Kiedis going? Give it away, give it away, give it away now.
Give it away, give it away, give it away now. All right, I will put that in. I will put that in the underneath this conversation. It's right at 18 minutes now. So that all the listeners can hear what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, that song is really good. Again, it's a brisk 96
by the way,
seconds. But
I was about to say, that's the other thing. They're all like 90 to 110 seconds. And then you have, if you're listening to the full discography, there's like the thing where he does the Karate Kid thing, and there's all these like songs that aren't really songs where, again, when I'm playing along with drums, it's like, whew, I can take a breather now. You know what I'm talking about? We do not train to be merciful here. Mercy is for the
interludes.
Weak. On the street or in competition. Yeah, okay.
I think that It Happens was on like a comp or something that I had.
Oh, could be. I don't know. I just have the discography. So
that's probably why I know that song. I mean, it is a good song, but
was in heavy rotation for something else. Now you're looking that up. All right. While you're looking that up, we're going to switch topics completely. And It Happens is done playing by now, which is why I was just kind of stalling. Make sure we talked about that for at least 96 seconds. Todd, I came across an article today on MSN.com, which is what my work browser defaults to, is MSN, which is why I saw
You know you can change that, right?
No, actually, I cannot. Believe it or not.
Someone could. Wait, you have to have your homepage as fucking MSN.com?
Yeah, we can't mess with the settings of our browser.
Also, the only reason MSN.com still exists is because it comes as a default to the Edge browser or whatever the fuck you use, probably.
Because I wanted to use Chrome, but you're right, we have to use Edge. Thanks, clients. Anyway, and the article was the top 100, according to IMDb rankings, the top 100 Seinfeld episodes. Now,
sorry, just to interject really quickly on Quattro
Racha. God damn it.
It was on the Attaining the Supreme compilation. That's how I know that song. Very distinctive cover that looks like a Pizza Hut logo, and it says Attaining the Supreme.
Mm. No one knows what you're talking about. Literally no one listening to this knows what you're talking about. Has ever heard
Somebody
that.
Listening knows.
Nope.
I bet I 11 you. Has heard that compilation.
I'm not saying that. I'm sure that's true. But he's not listening Maybe. To this.
It's a good
He
comp.
Will never. What else is that? What's the other highlights of that comp?
Let's see. We got Man or Astro Man. Kicking okay. it off.
Check.
I don't know if you remember the band Swank. Sort of a funk punk
I remember
band.
The magazine Swank. Oh, sorry.
The song, they have a song called, it's called Latin American Negro. Sounds sort of racist. That I don't think, I mean, it could be, but I that
you never know.
Sorry, the intention is definitely not racist.
What? Hang on. What year is this? Like 95? I'm guessing.
95.
Okay. Wow.
Let's
Point
see.
Scott.
There's a Hot Water Music song on here. Maximilian Kolbe. Less Than Jake. Another You'll Atlanta band, Car vs. Driver. Hmm. There's some great songs on here. Horace Pinker. I was never a big fan, but
I was not either. So is this one of those deals where it's like you saw it in the back of a zine and you ordered it? You called up a phone number, you sent it.
I feel like maybe Tom owned this, or we had it at the radio station. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure we had it at the radio station, but I don't remember specifically where I heard it. I think I had it on a tape. I dubbed it off of somebody, which was very common.
Really
looking through the on Discogs, the 400-page booklet, because this was a CD-only comp, and as comps were wont to do at the time, they would have a booklet, and each band would have like a page where they would put some info. And the Swank song that I mentioned is I think, about the Latin American Negro song is about people being discriminated against in the civil rights movement based on the imagery in their page.
You know what this is reminding me of?
What?
The Los Crudos show.
Yeah.
The famous Los Crudos Senseless Beauty show where they played, it was, I don't know, a 30-minute show. They played about
they played
6.5 minutes of music.
Minutes and talked for 25.
And they just preached. Yeah. And Todd's, no one has a fucking clue what they're talking about because it's probably half Spanish. And Todd's like put his hands up clapping because they're talking about the, I don't know, persecution of people in Mexico. I don't know. They were
I
very
saw
political.
7 Inch from that show. That show was amazing. Every show that I saw them in Chicago as well. We were on a college field trip, and I took a couple of my classmates,
your architecture
I guess,
buddies. Yeah.
And they're like, where the
to
fuck are we? Because
show.
They played at the, what the hell is it called? There's a club in Chicago that's at a bowling out, Fireside Bowl. They played there.
Oh, famous for Braid.
Famous
Braid
club.
Shows, yeah.
Yeah, lots of shows. All the Midwest emo bands played there. Anyway, so it was, Los Crudos, and I can't remember who else played, but it was a really good show. But yeah, they were a little scared because we were from South Carolina in Chicago for like to look at architecture, and then we went to, I was like, they're having this show, we should go, and they're like, all right, and we went. It was awesome.
And then they never talked to you again.
No,
nearly got his
I mean, I'm still friends with at least one of them on Facebook. Friends, put that in air quotes.
That doesn't count. Yeah, big time air quotes. But yeah, that's what that reminded me. Wait, did you say every show with Senseless Beauty was good? Or are you saying every time you saw Los Crudos, it was good?
Every time I saw Los Crudos, it was good. I mean, Definitely not every show with Senseless Beauty was good.
That's what I was like. I mean, that I'll take the compliment because several of those would have been my bands. But I definitely saw some fucking shithole shows.
They had a bunch of good shows there. I don't know who was like recruiting the 90s punk rock bands, but they had a bunch of like now famous in retrospect bands. It was probably Bickle. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know who was getting people there.
It could have been. It was not the guy.
Or they just had a big LSD thing that they wanted to play in the drug ring.
Definitely strung out on drugs. Which is, for those that don't know, that's how the club eventually got shut down. It's because it was a front for, LSD sales.
Everyone suspected they were a front for something because they basically charged nothing for shows and didn't do anything but have shows, to my knowledge, and gave away free lemonade.
It was a very good location down in downtown.
It was an amazing all-ages venue.
Yeah, it was very near Five Points. It was a scene, literally. But yeah, man, I saw Ass Factor 4 there probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. They were like the house band, essentially. I saw Stretch Armstrong there, which I was not a fan of Stretch Armstrong, but to your point, a band that eventually went on to relative success, regionally at least. But anyway, okay, are you done? Still listening to Quadalachi? You want to close that out?
No, I'm still listening. That's fine though.
Okay, good. The topic of the evening, one of the lead topics, top 100 Seinfeld episodes. We're not doing all 100. We ain't got that kind of time, even though it is a long form podcast. But I did want to talk about the top 10. See if you agree. Dissect highlights, lowlights. We have not prepared for this at all. I didn't mention this to you until 3 minutes before we started recording. I also have not looked at this until just, I mean, I've perused the top 10, but I've not done any sort of research, certainly. So starting with 10, working our way through, Todd.
You're going to have to remind me some of these. The titles don't always mean something to me.
Of course. Number 10, The Abstinence, season 8, episode 9. George is forced to give up sex for 6 weeks, and the experience opens new pathways into his previously preoccupied brain, which Jerry famously describes using a head of lettuce, saying, this is the part of your brain occupied with sex. This previously unused part, which is most of the head of lettuce. This is probably a top 10. The side story is, Jerry gets bumped from a gig at his old junior high school. His manager is played by the mother from That 70s Show, whose name I cannot remember.
Oh, right. And George is supposed to give a speech after he becomes a genius. But
then he has sex.
Inadvertently has sex with the cleaning lady or something in between.
Not the cleaning lady, but yes, that's correct. The cleaning lady's sex is like season 2. That's an early one. Georgie, the sweater. That's the cashmere sweater episode. And then the other side story with
Kramer.
But
that's not the same sex where his boss catches him and he's like, I was told you had sex on the desk.
Was that wrong? Was I not supposed to do that?
Honestly, I got to plead ignorance on this one. That's a different episode than The Abstinence, though.
That's a different episode, yes.
That is a great scene, though.
That is funny. Talk about playing stupid, playing dumb. So, again, season 8, in my personal opinion, 7, 8, 9, a lot of those could have made this top 10. So
if it's anything
past 7, I think it's not a surprise. It's in there. Okay, so we agree on The Abstinence. Next up, and this surprises me how late in the series this was. I honestly thought it was earlier. But next up is the Yada Yada, season 8.
Yeah, I mean, remembering clips from this is when Elaine had the older hair, the, like, sort of pulled back, like, crown of hair versus, like, her more natural out. Like, I remember, I would have thought this was, like, season 5 or 6.
I would say 6.
This is an amazing episode. This is like peak Elaine work in this one. I mentioned the bisque. Like just some great deliveries.
Oh, I mentioned the bisque. Feet kicked up on the couch. Yeah. And this also.
Yeah, she's still wearing like the penny loafers and white socks in this. Like, isn't she working for Mr. Pitt in this episode? Or am I conflating things?
No. You're definitely conflating things. Mr. Pitt's like season four. That's way. This is.
I know, but I feel like that's at least no, maybe she doesn't even look like that anymore in this episode. That's how I remember her looking, reciting these lines.
The penny loafers and socks. What a specific shout out there. I know exactly what you mean.
Very 90s wardrobe selection. Style, by the way.
Yeah. Early 90s. Yeah. But yeah, so obviously the yada yada, this became part of the national lexicon, is just skipping parts of the story. And it starts with George in a new relationship. And his,
yeah. You don't think she'd yada yada sex, would she?
Yeah.
I've yada yada sex.
That leads to the line you're talking about that Elaine says. But
yeah.
So yeah, it became something that is still used to this day. I probably said yada yada at some point in the last month.
I kind of feel like it existed before this show, but maybe it didn't.
It's possible.
It's hard to know. I mean, obviously this was 30 plus years ago or whatever, but
yeah. Well, not quite, but
maybe 30 years ago. I don't remember.
Arguably my favorite line from this episode. Yeah, it's 97, so no. My favorite line from this episode is, I think, literally the last line of this episode, which they're at a funeral or a wedding. I think a wedding. And Jerry is there with his new girlfriend, who is played by the woman from Will and Grace. I can't remember the actress's name.
Oh, and
he's like really, really into her. And then she says something about, she's like, yeah, but it's better than the blacks and the Jews or something. And he's like, whoa, like he discovers that she's a super racist. And that's
because
like the end of the episode.
She had yada yada'd it previously, like, right?
Correct. She had yada yada'd over it before. And it was like a Klan rally or something. I don't know the specifics of it. But so yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think they were at something racist. I think he just realized she was racist.
No.
Previously.
No, they weren't. Again, they were at a, I'm pretty sure they were at a wedding. But they were just seated there and they were kind of making small talk before the ceremony started. She's like, yeah, it's better than that. Whatever. Anyway, okay. We move on. The eighth highest ranked episode, I would put in my top three, personally.
Oh, it's funny. I was just going to say, this is not a top 10 episode for me. This is one of the most overrated episodes, I think.
Hard disagree. So it's the Merv Griffin Show, season 9, episode 6, where Kramer finds, I think it's the opening sequence, he finds the old set.
The old Merv Griffin set, in a dumpster.
And he brings it into his apartment somehow, and then is just living this fabricated life where he's hosting his own show at any day, or at any time of the day or night.
Part of the group of things where Kramer sort of like, they took his character too far. Like, just the ridiculousness of this. I don't know. It was too much for me.
I mean, it is Kramer on 11, but I think that's what makes it so great to me. And then you have Jerry and George playing with, is it Jerry's girlfriend who has the toy collection?
Yeah, and they give her turkey to knock her out.
They give her turkey and wine, and then they're just playing with all these toys from the 60s and 70s. And, of course, they're talking about this on the Merv Griffin set. And Kramer gets upset because he's like, oh, I didn't know we were talking about drugging people. The whole Merv Griffin thing, it just cracks me up. And then easily my favorite scene is when he pauses for a commercial break and stuffs Doritos in his face and then chugs a Pepsi or whatever. And burps and is like, we're back. And he's just back to reading the cue cards. I don't know. It's quintessential Kramer. I don't know that there's a better.
I mean, it's not
Kramer
a bad
episode.
I would say there are a few bad episodes of Seinfeld outside of the first couple of seasons, but I don't know.
Yes.
It's just not one of my favorites.
All right.
Unlike the next episode, which is one of my favorites.
Next up is one of the classics from a little earlier in the show's run, season 5, episode 21, The Hamptons.
Boutros Ghali.
Boutros Ghali.
Shrinkage.
Kramer, Jerry, and Elaine get to see George's girlfriend topless before he does. This is where shrinkage came from. I was in the pool.
I was in the pool.
Um, And of
so
course,
part of the reason I love this episode is when I was in college, we were studying abroad in Italy, and one of our classmates brought a tape of just stuff that they had taped off TV. And this episode and like a Friends episode were on it. So we watched some of these like sitcoms like seven or eight times because that was all the American television that we had. Sure. I mean, we had plenty of other fun stuff to do outside of the place we were staying, but you know, sometimes you just want to kick back and watch a little TV. And this was one of the episodes that we watched. So we watched it, I feel like, a million times, but yeah, it's that it definitely gets better if you watch it a dozen times.
And I've probably seen it that many times, but maybe not in a short period of time. This one also has the classic, you got to see the baby. And then Elaine and Jerry both go and see the baby.
Yeah.
And just have a reaction to it, which even as a father now, it hasn't changed my opinion on this at all. I love the fact that they're calling that out. Everyone says, oh, every baby's beautiful. No, some babies are fucking ugly. They're hideous. Definitely. They like, let's be realistic about this. Not every baby's pretty. But Elaine is, of course, he's upset. Elaine's upset because the doctor calls the baby breathtaking. So season 5, episode 21, another classic that Todd watched in Europe, apparently. Number 6 on this list, The Bizarro Jerry, season 8, episode 3. This is where Elaine decides that she just can't hang out with these idiots anymore. And she goes and finds some new friends, and they all match up kind of one for one with in both appearance and personality with
they're all much nicer than the gang.
Yeah, for example, when they're hanging out in what is Bizarro Jerry's apartment, there's a knock at the door. Who is it? It's whatever the guy's name. What's the Kramer equivalent?
I don't recall.
It's something with a K, whatever. And they're like, oh, okay, and they let him in, as opposed to just Kramer walking into Jerry's apartment, which is what happens all the time. But yeah, they stand up when Elaine enters the room, like they're actually polite. They sit at the other side of the diner, like the, they go to a completely different diner first, but the window side, as opposed to, you know, what is essentially up front of stage in reality at the Seinfeld set. But, I don't know if I would have put this one in my top 10. It is funny.
What else happens in this episode? There must be some other subplot.
Yeah, this is the one where George finds his way into that underground club with like all these models because he has a picture in his wallet.
Oh, because his fiance
died.
An
attractive woman. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would. I don't think this would make my top 10. It's a good episode, but it would probably be in the 20s range, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It also has Jerry's dating the Manhands, which does have some funny cinematography when they show.
Wait,
her
this
opening
is the
up
Manhands? Lobster. This is Grandma Mama's? Part's pretty good.
Sure. Yeah. So again, funny side stories. The main story is the Bizarro Jerry. And it's just, I don't know. Creative again.
Yeah, it's okay.
Not their best work. Okay, top 5. Number 5. This would definitely be my number 5. In my top 5, maybe top 3. Another one a little earlier.
This is a top 3 episode for me, for sure. Just for George's monologue.
Yes. The marine biologist. So, arguably Jason Alexander's best acting performance, telling the story of going out into the sea, mounting a whale and pulling a golf ball, and Kramer with his classic response, "The Titleist," because Kramer had been hitting golf balls into the ocean.
I feel like this is one of the earliest wrap all the stories together, storylines together episodes.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely is.
And definitely one of the most successful, I think.
I think so, too. Like an old man trying to send soup back at a deli. Just his monologue is just fucking classic. I can't quote it here, but if I'm watching it, like I'm talking along with him. I'm saying everything he's saying because I've seen it so many times. Anyway, so.
The sea was rough out there, my friends. Classic.
Oh, man. Classic George monologue. And it's funny that the write-up here doesn't mention anything about anything else that was happening. I don't even remember why it was that Kramer was hitting golf balls in the ocean. I guess just as a hobby, as something to do. But
I don't remember either. I don't remember what else happened in this episode. But it's just for that that ending scene. Yeah. It's top three for me. It's so good.
It is classic. Hole in one. All right. So that's number five. Number four is the earliest of the top ten here. Season 4, episode 17, The Outing. Outing meaning coming out, because this is where Jerry and George are mistaken for a gay couple. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Another phrase that
classic
becomes
line,
part of the modern lexicon. Yeah. And yeah, that's really the gist of it. Again, top 15 maybe. I wouldn't put this at number 4.
It might be in my top 10, but it definitely would not be all the way up at number 4.
Yeah. I agree. And again, I don't know what the side stories were on this one. I can't remember specifically. But yeah, that's the main story, is that the whole episode they're trying to convince this reporter that they are not a gay couple, and yet she keeps catching them together at the same place at the same time. They're saying certain things that imply that they are in a relationship, and it's just not the case. So, yeah, a little high for me, but good episode. Maybe not great.
I mean, I'm reading the storyline. It's mostly around that, like, George gets Jerry tickets to Guys and Dolls as a birthday gift.
yeah. Yes.
The other classic part from this episode is when George's mom calls him and says,
"Georgie,
why didn't you tell me you were gay?" or whatever.
Right.
Or maybe it's Jerry's mom that says it. I can't remember.
It could have been either one. I could see.
I think maybe Jerry's mom calls him, and then George's mom freaks out when she finds out or something like that.
Right. Yeah, because he's like, oh, no. Yeah, I have to rush to Staten Island, tell my mom that I'm not gay. Yeah, I do remember that. He doesn't make it in time. Okay. Now, the top three. Again, this is all based on IMDb user ratings. I don't know if I said that yet. But the top three have the same score, a 95% or 9.5 score. So I'll read them the way they have them listed, but they're interchangeable. Number three, season 5, episode 22, The Opposite. This is where George discovers that if he does the complete opposite of every instinct that he has, things go his way. Up to and including at the diner approaching a woman, doing the complete opposite of what he would normally do, which is sit here and do nothing. Instead, he goes up and talks to her and has a classic opening line. I don't remember all the exact words, but he says, I'm unemployed, I live with my parents, whatever, and introducing himself, she goes, hi, I'm whatever her name is. Like, she's immediately interested in his life, which he would not think would be true, and of course it wouldn't be true.
I think he says, I'm bald, overweight, unemployed, and live with my parents or something like that. I don't know if he says overweight, but he says bald, I'm pretty sure.
Right. So that works out for him. Let's see. And then Larry David.
It also has the Kramer coffee table book as part of this episode. I'm looking at the story.
Oh, classic. Where he makes an appearance on the Regis and Kathy. It's Regis and Kathy Lee, I assume.
Yeah.
Show to promote his book.
It spills coffee.
Like, oh,
I just
love that. Yeah, they're like, oh, I love that. I love when you can. What does Kathy Lee say? Something stupid. I love when a book does something. Or you can use it for something. She has some stupid line. As only Kathy Lee would. And this is also the first appearance officially of Larry David as the George Steinbrenner voice, according to what I'm reading. He had several appearances throughout the show, but that's probably what he's best known for. It's just the voice, not the actual acting of the George Steinbrenner character. But
they have the quote here that George says.
Yeah.
He says, my name is George. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents. And Victoria says, I'm Victoria, hi.
I'm Victoria, hi.
I guess he doesn't say bald.
Yeah. I know I had the key elements there. Again, this is a good one. Not sure it would be this high for me, but... Definitely the concept
again,
is good.
Definitely a good concept. I mean, I like when Jerry, he's like, I'm going to try and throw $20 out the window. And then finds a 20 in his pocket. Like, there's some good gags in this one.
Even Steven. Okay. Number two. possibly the most popular episode. Well, this and number one, I think, are in the running for the most popular episode. Soup Nazi, season 7, episode 6. If you've been alive for more than 25 years in this world, you're familiar with the Soup Nazi episode. It is based on an actual operation, not entitled the Soup Nazi, but an actual soup place. But yeah, this is one of the rare episodes that the central character is not one of the lead characters. It's more the interactions with the Soup Nazi, the ordering process. Elaine goes in and acts a fool and gets kicked out by the Soup Nazi. And say no more. And then, of course,
we also
the episode
get to meet
ends.
The gay toughs that steal Kramer's or Lane's armoire from Kramer, who later show up in the Ribbon episode.
The Ribbon. Who will not wear the Ribbon? Yes, that is their first sighting. Yeah, so Kramer's supposed to be guarding an armoire.
It's interesting that we have this the Soup Nazi, as you said, who's not one of the main characters, but becomes iconic.
The central
in this
focus
episode.
Of the show.
And
yeah.
Then we also have these other two guys who I think are only in those two episodes, but there aren't many like reoccurring. There are obviously like Banya and whatever the Breaking Bad guy, the dentist, Tim Watley.
Tim Watley.
Like,
yeah.
Have some recurring
Stickle
roles.
Stickle of fluoride. But... Yes. Stickle of fluoride. Oh, come on. He switched to Judaism purely for the jokes. See, that would be a top 10 episode to me. That's a fucking classic.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. I don't know. There's so many good episodes. Some of these.
Jerry,
I mean,
our people.
Soup Nazi for sure is a top 10 episode. But
yeah, I can't argue with Soup Nazi. You're through when Jerry or when Elaine steals or finds the recipes.
Mulligatawny.
Good stuff. All right. And then the final one, again, between Soup Nazi and this one, I think are the.
Not surprising.
The two most well-known is, of course, the contest, season 4, episode 11. This is a little earlier than I would have thought, too. I wouldn't have thought this was a season 4, but and this is, of course, where George, Jerry, Elaine, and Kramer have a contest to see who can last the longest without pleasuring themselves. And, Elaine is working out at the gym, and John F. Kennedy Jr., RIP, comes in, so she's out earlier than some might have expected. Kramer meets someone and just sleeps with him, as I recall. Like they show him laying in bed with the woman.
No, Kramer. Kramer, after having seen a naked woman across the street, enters the apartment, exits 30 seconds later with a wad of cash. I'm
right.
Out.
I'm done. And he slams down the counter. That's right. Yeah, he's looking at a naked woman through Jerry's window, mind you. And then he goes back into his apartment. Yeah, comes back soon thereafter. Slams the money down the table.
They have some other quotes in here. It says, Elaine realizing George and Jerry aren't paying attention. So then I got a call this morning. You know, I was chosen to go on the space shuttle. We're going to Mars. Jerry Seinfeld staring at the woman. Uh-huh. George, have a good time. They're looking at the naked woman across the street.
Yeah, they're not paying a damn bit of attention to what she's saying. Yeah. Classic. Ignorance of what's happening in the rest of the room.
Also,
yeah, I mean,
mom is in the hospital next door.
Oh, yeah.
Sharing a room. Not even next door, but sharing a room. There's a woman getting a sponge bath.
Yeah, they just do the whoosh, pull the sheet across and you can see the silhouette.
Yeah.
That is funny. Yeah, classic episode. And again, the key to this one is how do you talk about these sorts of taboo subjects without talking about these taboo subjects? So the term master of my domain, queen of my castle, like all these things came into the forefront of people's speech. And
it's easier for a woman not to do it than a man. We have to do it. It's part of our lifestyle. It's like shaving, Elaine. Oh, that's such baloney. I shave my legs. Kramer, not every day.
Not every day. With a bunch of fruit in his mouth, I believe. Pounding cream.
It just says while eating. I thought he was eating a sandwich, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
It could. Yeah, he's just got a bunch of food. Not every day. Fair point. Fair point, Kramer. Not shaving those legs every day. So anyway, so that's the top 10. Again, they listed 100, but I'm not going through 100. It's interesting to me. I just looked at this number 11, so just missing out was season 3, episode 18, The Limo. That's the one where they're like they jump into the limo.
Oh, that's
for O'Brien,
the Nazi one.
And he's like a super right wing, a Nazi basically. He's going to Madison Square Garden. And they realize they've kind of gotten themselves into a pickle.
I would say that maybe the best one from season 3. I don't know. I don't have season 3 in front of me, but it's certainly not close to top 10.
No. Not a good one, in my personal opinion.
Other than George trying to pick up the white supremacist lady.
Yes. That is funny. But yeah, like, just... I will not go past 20, I promise. But like... They have Serenity Now as 20. I think Serenity Now is in my top 10. And it's not because of the Serenity Now part. It's because that's the same episode where Kramer finds the screen door and he turns his little area into like Anytown USA's watering plants.
And he
plants.
Gets hassled by the kids.
Yeah. They put shaving cream on the screen door. Like, that whole premise is just so goddamn funny. And then they have Kenny Rogers at 18. Kenny Rogers might be one of my top 10 too, because there's the fact that Jerry and Kramer switch apartments and then switch personalities is just hilarious to me.
I don't know if that one holds up or not. The last time I saw it, I was kind of that again is getting into that Merv Griffin territory where it's a little like Jerry's acting is so bad when he's Kramer.
It's terrible.
Oh, God.
Oh, I'm tense.
I mean, I know that. Acting is never his forte, but he's better when he's doing this sort of like sly one-liners. When he's trying to like go beyond that, oof, gets rough
right
quickly.
Yeah, gets a little touchy, that's for sure. But anyway, so again, check that out. Just go to MSN and look for top 100 Seinfeld episodes of all time.
Don't go to MSN. You can just Google it, you fucking weirdo.
Go to Ask Jeeves and say top 100 Seinfeld episodes, according to IMDb.
What was that other search engine? It was like Hotbox or...
Hotbox? Dog Pie?
It wasn't what it was called.
I'm certain it was not Hotbox, you fucking weirdo.
It was Hot.
Are you talking about
something.
Dog Pile?
Huh?
Dog Pile?
No.
This is like in the late 90s, what I'm talking about.
Definitely. I feel like it had Hot in the name. Hotbot. Sorry, not Hotbox.
Hotbot. Explain to the listeners, Todd, what a hotbox is.
To my understanding, it's sort of like a Dutch oven, right? You just
it's exactly like a Dutch oven.
Trap someone under the covers or something and fart and hotbox them in, or in a car, I guess, is what it normally is.
Yeah, that's correct, when they have no escape.
But Hotbot. I used the Hotbot search engine for quite some time.
When was that relevant? When was that a thing?
It says mid-90s.
Oh, God.
It displaced AltaVista at the
browser,
top of the
Todd?
Heap.
Nice. Very nice. Really showing that age.
I think it was like a competitor to Yahoo at the time. This was pre-Google in my memory.
Clearly. Yeah. Well, yeah. It would have had to have been. Because once Google entered the realm, watch out, kids. Okay,
I remember
Todd.
When Google first came out and had... based on your search, they would have that number of like the number of pages would be the number of O's in the middle of the Google logo, which was a different logo than it is now, obviously. Terrible logo.
Yes.
Yeah. Whew.
Should have bought more stock. Anyway.
Yeah. Should have bought some.
I have a list here, Todd, as Christmas is just around the corner for us.
About hotboxing?
About hotboxing. That's right. The top 7 Hotbox Christmas songs.
Hotbox locations.
This is according to a website that I've never heard of called studyfinds.org. These are the top 7 Christmas songs. Okay. Don't look it up. No cheating. Stop.
I'm not looking. I'm just listening to you.
All right. I want to read to you the top 7 songs, and I just want you to react to these. Okay?
You want to give
number
one, yay or nay or...
I just want your thoughts. Yay, nay, I agree. I'm sick of that song. This list is retarded. Like, whatever you want to say. I don't care. Okay. No, I don't think these are in order. This is just a top seven. But the first one listed is All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. Thoughts, comments?
This is number seven?
This is number one. It's listed as number one. Again, I don't think it's like the best one. It's just here's seven songs.
I mean, so I would say for maybe a decade or 15 years after this song came out. Does it say when it came out? I feel like it came out.
1994, Todd. 1994.
Whoa. Wow. Did not realize it was that old. It's old. It was
just like Mariah Carey.
Obviously, you had the Mariah Carey stans who loved it, but I think for many of us, we're like, fucking A, I hate that song. However, it has gained a resurgence, I think. I saw a TikTok video actually breaking down all the tracks. There's this guy who does, he basically has the stems of a bunch of different songs. He's some kind of music producer. And Mariah Carey she quadruples her vocals, and then like the background singers are also at least all doubled.
Jesus.
So she sings the same line four times, for those of you who might not know what that means. I think there's some slight harmony in the parts that she's singing. And then it goes through all the percussion. There's like tons. There's like congas and like a bunch of synths. There's all the music is like synthesized, but like some of the synths sound like saxophones and stuff. I don't know. This song has grown on me, I guess, is my more long-standing point. Like, I don't think it's bad. I really like the background vocals, the "and I" part that are singing behind her. That sort of works really well in the song. So I'm not surprised that it's popular. I think it was popular and then had a steep downfall for people for a while, because I think it got probably way overplayed, but 100%. Has resurged as, honestly, it's a modern, modern, I'm going to use modern in air quotes here, modern classic Christmas song. As much as like, is it Wham or George Michael that do Last Christmas, another sort of modern classic that may be on the
list? Don't read ahead on me.
What's that?
Maybe. I said, don't read ahead on me. But I feel like this is also a song that had a period, and maybe it's come through that period, where it was one of the most hated Christmas songs.
That's literally what I just fucking said. Did you not listen to me?
You didn't say it was hated. You said it had a steep drop off in popularity.
Yeah, that's what.
Not that it went. I said negative, earlier. I like think under the X axis. Like
I think I actively hated this song for a good 10-15 years after its release, and then I think it had a resurgence. That's what I was saying. I think people were like, it was very popular. Some people held on to it the whole time, but a lot of people were like, I can't fucking hear that song anymore. And it dropped out, and then it sort of came back with a second life, which seems to have withstood time a little better than maybe the original popularity.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Next up, Last Christmas by Wham.
Wham. Interesting.
1984.
I mean, this, I would say, is, again, another modern classic. If you think of, like, Jingle Bells or Frosty the Snowman or any of those songs that you hear popular, like Bing Crosby or Gene Autry renditions from the 50s and 60s, this is the 80s version of that, because it's a original song, but I think it's definitely of a time, but it has enough charm that people just love this song.
I think this has become, and maybe it always was, but because it's a Christmas song, this has become Wham's biggest song ever.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, probably.
I would think so.
I've also heard like four or five more contemporary pop stars covering this song now, which just shows me how much it's become a classic, and also how old I am.
And also how good the original was. Because I'm not saying all the Wham, all the Last Christmas covers are not good, none of them are as good as the original.
I have not heard one that's better than the original, for sure.
It's not possible. It's never going to happen. Huge
win. I don't know if that's true. I mean, there's always ability to improve on
Never going to happen. All right. Next up, and you just said this in your description, 1942's White Christmas by Bing Crosby.
Oh, there you go.
Makes sense, right?
Fucking crooner classic. My favorite part about this song is the whistle solo, which which is quite elaborate and impressive.
Yes.
I'm guessing that was not Bing Crosby that did that, but maybe it was. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. It doesn't say here.
They probably don't reference the whistle solo. That may be something that...
Well, they should.
...specifically appeals to me.
Yeah, it doesn't really talk about the whistling, which is a shame.
Well, that I got to look it up now.
Okay. Of course. All right. Now we get into the reason that I wanted to go through this list. Okay? Number four. 1988.
It says the recording is noted for Crosby's whistling during the second chorus. There you go.
Okay, good for him. All right, can you pay attention again, please?
Sorry.
1988's Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues and Christy McCall.
What's it called?
Fairy Tale of New York.
Never heard it. I mean, I'm sure I've heard it, but sorry, I'm seeing something else that says... No, he didn't whistle. Oh, ChatGPT says he didn't whistle, but some other people, some people say he did. So fuck the robots. It's definitely
these people.
I don't give a shit what ChatGPT says. Sorry,
I don't give a shit that you can't say GPT.
what's this Pope song?
Of New York, 1988, and Kirsty MacColl. They say, and I quote, let me find, it says in the write-up, about as bittersweet a Christmas song as it's possible to imagine. The Pogues and Kirsty MacColl's Celtic folk-flavored Fairy Tale of New York was once banned by the BBC for its raw language, but it's now the most played Christmas song of the 21st century. I have never heard this song. I can see that you're listening to it now. I don't think you've ever heard this song either. So... How the fuck, even if we're talking about Ireland.
Playing a video and listening to it, I don't think I've ever heard this song. There's no way it's the most highly played, whatever they said.
I mean, I've heard of the Pogues. I don't think I've ever heard of Kirsty MacColl. Maybe I have, but
no.
That's it.
I mean, the Pogues, I think lead singer, some member of the Pogues just died. I don't know what, I'm not obviously a huge Pogue head or whatever their fans are called, but
no. Pogo head.
Somebody just died. It's a very ballady, slow song. I haven't gotten to the part.
It
where
sounds like
any
one of the songs from
vocals
the,
in it,
the Stereo
so
Gum
I don't
list
know.
This year. Do you remember that Irish band that was on the Stereo Gum list this year? That's what this sounded like to me. I have no fucking recollection of what the band was.
I don't remember that, but I'll take your word for it. This song, again. I don't have any history with it, but it sounds like shit to me right now. So I'm not gonna.
Thank you.
I can't imagine this is a hugely popular song. I'm not sure. If you're
confused.
A Pogues fan, I'm sure it's wonderful. I'm sure the lyrics are deep. But I would say the average Christmas music fan is not singing this. Oh, now Christy's coming in. She has a very Irish lilt to her voice.
Oh, yes.
Oh, maybe I have heard this.
It becomes much more upbeat
in this part.
No, you don't know it. It's bullshit. No one's ever heard this song. I don't know how it made this list.
I mean, it sounds like a traditional sort of Irish dancing song or something.
Celtic folk rock,
but I don't think I've ever
Tap
heard it.
Tap your shoes and drink
song.
An Irish beer or whatever. Drink a set of Foster's. That's Australian. What's an Irish beer?
A Guinness.
Beer?
A pint.
A Guinness.
A pint of Guinness.
A pint of Guinness. That'll do you well. Okay,
we'll be having one of them for the holidays.
No, you won't. Number five.
No, I won't be.
I know you won't. Three more left.
Three more left.
Number
sweet.
Five.
Wait, this is number 19, five? Oh, we're going the other
way.
Sorry.
Number five. We're going the other way. 1963. Darlene Love. Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home.
Classic. You know the song.
I possibly do. This was another one I was unsure of.
Darlene Love is like this is a Phil Spector joint.
Correct.
So it's some excellent music production. It's off that Phil Spector Christmas album. This, to me, is not the most famous song off that. Oh, you've heard this song. Christmas.
How's it
going to
sing it for us?
Christmas. Christmas.
So this is the same one that they satirized on SNL, talking about the
Jews, a classic song. This does not surprise me. Wall of Sound behind it, great girl group from the 60s. Yes, okay. Thumbs up for me.
Todd approves. All right, going back to true classics, pre 1950. 1946's Nat King Cole, The Christmas Song, Merry Christmas to You.
Hmm. Sure. Interesting, this song was written by the Velvet Fog. I'm surprised they have Nat King Cole's version, although Nat King Cole's fucking silver throat or golden voiced fellow. So
they mentioned the Baltimore.
It's so weird that this is the Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire song, for those of you who don't know, because the song title is fucking terrible. The Christmas Song.
It is.
I mean, I guess if you're trying to become the one true Christmas song, it's a good name for it. But if you're trying to, people are like, what's the Christmas song? And you're like, oh, it's the Chestnuts Roasting on the Open Fire. Like, oh, yeah, I know that song.
Oh, yeah.
I knew it was called The Christmas Song. Such a weird title.
By the way, have you ever or do you know anyone who has ever roasted chestnuts over an open fire?
No.
Asking for a friend.
I feel like chestnuts are not, I mean, certainly now, not the most popular nut.
I'm not sure I've ever eaten a chestnut.
That's what I mean. Like, if it were almonds or cashews or peanuts.
Almonds, peanuts, cashews.
They would go a lot farther than chestnuts.
I'm
not exactly sure where you get a chestnut. The only chestnuts I think most people probably know or have had are like water chestnuts in Chinese food, which I think have nothing. I don't like those either, but I don't think they have anything to do with chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
No.
I'm pretty positive they do not.
I think it's a totally different family there.
It's also interesting that people think of it as chestnuts roasting on an open fire, but that honestly is just that opening line. It's not like he repeats it. It doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the song.
It's not the theme. This isn't a song about cooking. Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything
It's not a key thing, but it's such an iconic sort of opening line. And it makes you feel like Christmas, even if it's a food you've probably never fucking had in your life and something you've never experienced. It's very weird. It's very homey, comfy feeling song.
This was written in 1945. Maybe before our parents were born. Roasting chestnuts was a thing that people did.
Sure.
But that was a long fucking time ago, so I don't know. I just don't know. I'll have to do some research on that. We'll get back to you on the chestnut situation. Okay, and now arguably, in my opinion, the most controversial addition to this list.
Oh, apparently roasted chestnuts are maybe an Italian food.
Well, then it makes sense that Mel Torme would write about them.
Sure.
The old Velvet Fog, as you so accurately describe it. Okay. The last and final song.
It also says,
Jesus
Christ. They are similar to a roasted sweet potato. So I wonder if they are, like, I think of a nut as being a roasted nut even would be more of a crunchy textural thing, but maybe it's more of a pudding texture.
Pudding?
I have no idea. Well, roasted
sweet
potatoes are not crunchy. They're like soft.
But they're not pudding texture.
I mean, they're more like
mashed
potatoes.
Also, who the fuck are you saying pudding? Really going deep
well,
to your
smoother,
Carolina roots.
A smoother, more creamy texture rather than a crunchy. Yeah. If I hear chestnuts roasting, I'm thinking of like a roasted almond or a walnut
nuts.
Or something.
Yeah, something you got to use a nutcracker to open. Sure. That's
but
what you should
think. I think this looks like they're more mushy, I guess.
Mm. Like pudding texture?
Maybe? Pudding.
All right. Last one, most controversial. 1971.
Ooh, interesting choice.
Are you looking? You're looking at the list.
No, I'm not looking at the list. I don't know what the fuck you're going to say. I'm just saying year-wise, not necessarily the peak of music.
I genuinely don't know how you feel about the song. I think you either hate it or really like it.
Oh, is this a John Lennon song?
1971, John Lennon, Yoko Ono, and the Harlem Community Choir, Happy Xmas, aka War is Over. thoughts.
Not a fan.
I didn't think you were.
I think Yoko Ono has some really great artistic elements. Singing, not really one of them. And I don't, I'm a person who likes dissonance and noise. This ain't it, though. No, thank you. What's the name of this song? I got to listen to it now. When she sings, it's like fucking nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, it's nails on a chalkboard. It's called Happy Xmas, and then in parentheses, War is Over. I'm sure if you looked up
War, you might be like, oh, she doesn't sing in the song. If you listen to the real song, she is screeching through the back half of it. It does not sound good.
It's all screeching. It's terrible. Okay. I'm going to do my own honorable mention
also,
for this list.
Children singing is not always the most soothing sound. There's a lot of kids singing in this song, too.
Yeah, the Harlem Community Choir, they do fine.
But yeah, they're not terrible. I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure it's an additive element to this song.
That's fair. I can go for that.
Sorry, I'm listening to it. I may be a little harsh with her singing, but she's not adding a lot to this song. The song is very repetitive. And if it doesn't have solid vocals on it, it's not jumping to the top of my list.
Okay.
Similarly, there's that Paul's Christmas song is also terrible. I can't think of what that weird 70s
one. A wonderful
one.
Christmas time. That's what I was about to bring up as my honorable mention.
What's it called?
I don't know what you think about that one.
Oh, Christmas time.
I think it's called Wonderful Christmas Time. Yeah. School is out.
Yeah, it's got some.
I have no
cheeseball music in that fucking song.
What the fucking
I love
lyrics
Paul McCartney,
are.
But that song is terrible.
Here's my favorite part about that song is just making up lyrics because I can't for the life of me remember what they ever are. And of course, I get very graphic very quickly, so I'm not going to do it here live on the pod. But that's really fun to sing along with. Also,
yeah, that
very
synth
repetitive.
With the delay on it. God, that song's terrible.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Simply having wonderful Christmas time.
It's like delay and reverb. Yeah, that was the height of what was his band? Not the Eagles.
It's Wings. So this is a Wings.
Wings. Yeah.
It says it was Wings. It's not labeled as such on YouTube, so maybe
it's a Paul McCartney song.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to blame anyone else. This song is not good.
They all were. So you don't like that one. Which do you dislike more, War is Over or Wonderful Christmas Time or whatever the fuck?
Oh, man, they're both terrible.
I don't think it's a toss-up. I think War is Over is way worse. I don't really mind Wonderful Christmas. I'm not going to lie to you. I could listen to it.
This
just
song would be better if it didn't have that goofy reverb echo thing on it. That part drives me crazy because it's so prevalent in the song. It just ruins it. I think the melody
really
is better in this song, though.
That really stamps what era it came from, though. Like, you need that to know.
Jesus, yes.
This is a 1975 or whatever the fuck year it was. I don't know. Feels about right. 74, 75, my guess. Is it showing up on whatever you're listening to it on?
It did not. Let me see.
Okay. It's fine. It does.
This came out in 79. Woo! Same age as my boy.
Shitty year.
Jars of Clay covered it in 2007. I do not need to hear that, but I bet it sucks.
Whoa. I do need to hear that. Jars of Clay, like the Christian rock band?
I assume so.
Tooth and Nail Records own Jars of Clay. I think I'll listen to
it. Were they on Tooth and Nail?
I'm pretty sure Jars of Clay was on Tooth and Nail. No, you know what? I'm thinking I made a very interesting leap there. No. I made an interesting leap. MXPX has a song called Jars of Clay back when they were Christian for like their first two albums.
Oh, okay.
And those albums were on Tooth and Nail. So that's the leap that I made there.
That makes more
sense. Jars of Clay is a Christian rock band. From Greenville, Illinois. Yes. Didn't even know that was a thing.
They do not have the delay in their keyboard.
Mm. Good for them.
But it doesn't make the song better.
For them.
I think that's more them singing it, though.
By the way, I love when a band, Jars of Clay is the band. Their first album, self-titled, came out in 95. They released albums basically every other year, every third year, until 2013. But if you look at their Wikipedia, it says they're still active. They haven't released an album in 10 years. Like, what's the cutoff?
Although their hit song feels like Flood, I was trying to remember what it sounded like. Not a bad song.
I don't remember.
If I could have been there 14 days. It's about Noah's Ark, I think.
Oh. Here's what I don't like about that song is he stays up at that note too long. Like he needs to keep moving around. Yeah,
but it's
he stays on one note
again,
and plateaus.
Not my favorite, but not a terrible song.
Yeah.
But you're right. He does. It is at that same pitch for too long. It just sounds like a little kick.
It's like I'm trying to change the channel. Yeah. It's like, bro, move the melody here.
Get some dynamism in your vocal melody.
Yes, exactly. That's probably why they haven't released an album in 10 years. Somebody wants to buy that fucking single note shit.
I mean, this song came out probably 97, no, I would guess.
Their hit was a long time ago. Was it off the Much Afraid album, possibly? What's it called? What's the name of that track?
It's called Flood. Again, I think actually is about Noah's Ark, which is a weird song to write, or a weird thing to write a song about if you're not doing like vacation Bible school jams.
95, by the way.
95. Okay. So nearly 30 years old. And yep. Definitely their peak, as far as I know.
And their first album. So
their what?
That was their first album. That was their debut album. Man, who would have thought we were going to be talking about Jars of Clay?
Yeah, the bangers from Jars of Clay.
But to be fair to them, I'm looking at their entire discography. In terms of where they rank on the U.S. Christian charts, every album except for one is at least peaked at the top five position. And
good
many
for
of them.
Them
peaked at
do what you do. So I'm reading the lyrics and they're rapping their personal struggles inside of a Noah's Ark parable,
I
think.
That is deep.
I'm not sure this song is about Noah and his Ark. It's just the 40 days and the title Flood led me to believe it. So there's definitely some allusions to that, but I'm not sure it's a
Todd, I know it's the holidays.
Straight narrative.
I know it's the holidays. By the next time we do a show, I want you to do a write-up on the details of this song. The meaning of the lyrics. Just kind of educate the people here on Jars of Clay.
I mean, I think they're... I could do it now if you want.
No, I want you to put some time into it.
Okay. I think it's an ode to JC.
Okay. I mean, isn't that what every song is supposed to be? You've seen the South Park episode, by the way?
I assume so. What?
Where Cartman starts a Christian band?
No.
God, it's really funny.
I have not watched enough South Park by that.
You haven't?
Not much at all.
You need to. I think it's...
I know
I
they have
all
some vicious satire. Just
very much.
It's something I'd have to watch on my own, so it doesn't get done a lot.
I think your older daughter could be introduced to it.
She could be introduced. I just don't know if she'd be interested. Her tastes like don't currently align with biting political and social satire.
They're more that of a tween girl who cares about.
She'd be more aligned with the groups that are being satirized, I would assume. Popular culture
point.
And that sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Stupid shit that teens like. Yeah.
You got to start them somewhere, though.
I'm trying. Okay. I'm trying to show her another path.
That's good. Show her the light. Have her listen to this podcast. That'll get her started on the right path.
Yeah. One of her friends, they were looking at some of the, I think I told you this, some of the descriptions of our podcasts and giggling because there were some more adult themes listed in the description.
There certainly are. I'm working on my clickbait titles. That was a while ago.
I tried to discourage them from listening, but I think I had. I don't know how robust the 12-year-old podcast listener audience is, especially
this long
girls.
Form 90 minutes. They're not gonna listen. Yeah.
If it were
even with me putting
seconds,
in the time
maybe
stamps,
they could get through the first 10, but
Yeah, even with the timestamps, they're like, I'm not fast-forwarding that. Don't take too long. Let me watch this 15-second TikTok video again.
Oh, my God.
For the 14th time. Or this Mr. Beast video. Is she into Mr. Beast at all?
No, my younger daughter is more so. She watches some weird YouTube shit. Not like weird, like inappropriate or just.
I hope not.
But just there's a lot of
just
like
unusual
kids doing stuff and being like being very melodramatic about doing things like. I don't even know.
Sounds
like
terrible.
Like baking, but they'll be everything's like overacted. You know how all kids shows like the actors on them are terrible and like
over the top,
very
yes.
melodramatic. I think yes. that's seeped into sort of the how people present themselves on sort of reality video. It's not like reality TV, but people just doing stuff on YouTube or whatever that make their own channels. I mean, it's all right. about smash that like and subscribe button, but oh God, so it just
ring the bell for notifications.
It looks weird to me because it's not clearly not aimed at me and not my aesthetic. So I don't understand what the appeal is. It's like there might be some interesting content in there, but the rapper is so bizarre to me that I don't know how anybody could watch it for more than 5 seconds.
I got news for you, though, Todd. You're a man of a certain age.
Yes, that's what
everything
I'm saying.
You're going to come
not
across
made for me.
On TikTok is not for you. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely like
or YouTube or whatever.
Get off my lawn, sort of vibes there. But I think even though I wouldn't have admitted to this as a youth, there definitely is stuff that you think is cool as a kid, and you're like, what the fuck? When you get a little older, even yourself, like, why did I like that?
No, I think back to
some of it's good
things I did.
Some of it's not.
The way I acted in certain situations, and I completely agree. I cringe when I think about
everyone
that.
Everyone has those cringe moments.
Yeah, but that's part of growing up. You learn. You hopefully learn. If you don't, you're missing out on an opportunity to grow, develop. You know, become a better person. You know what I'm saying?
Word.
You hear me?
That's our note for the end of the year. We're podcasting next week, right? Post holiday.
I ain't got shit to do.
Okay.
Odds of you having a white Christmas, Todd? 0 or 0.1?
Definitely closer to 0, or whatever negative 0 is.
Oh boy. To establish a math.
You know what I mean. So. Negative 100, I'd say, chances of us having a white Christmas in South Carolina. I will say there has been discussion or talk of maybe going to the Biltmore House on Christmas Eve. Whether that'll happen or not, I'm not sure. I've not been in a while, but.
Wow. Is that. I feel like you'd have to already have tickets in hand if that was something you were going to do.
I don't know. This was decided upon and proposed today.
At dinner today?
By my wife. So.
I'm going to speculate like,
it'll probably
that,
be,
that might not be a possibility.
Not crowded then because it's Christmas Eve. I was like, maybe.
It's a weekend day, though. It's a Sunday.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, that's...
Apparently
I don't
can,
think that's
you can stay... Jesus Christ. Do you know how much it costs to go to the Biltmore House? Fuck.
$105.
During the holiday season, admission starts at $110. The fuck?
I just said $105. Give the man his money. He guesses well.
Yeah
Christmas
is pretty...
way more expensive than regular. What were you expecting?
I don't know. I've not been in a long time. Clearly.
I mean, I've been since we moved here, which is almost 10 years ago. But Jamie and I went, I don't know, early 2010s, I guess, 2010, 2011. It was fine. It was as I remember it. We spent a little more time out in, like, gardens, which I don't recall doing much.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think they added that. 8,000 acres of gardens and grounds. I don't remember any gardens and grounds, to be honest.
They must
I
have.
I mean, could be because we didn't give a shit about gardens and grounds, but...
I just
it's
like
interesting that
the
for the I'm looking at these holiday prices like all the add-ons include the 8,000 acres of gardens and grounds. I'm like, it's probably like 45 degrees outside. Do you really want to walk around some dead greenery? for a few hours? I don't understand.
Hard pass, for sure. Hard pass. Hard pass. Okay, well, it's a shame you're not going to get a white
Christmas. It's not sold out on the
Christmas Get the Eve. Fuck out of here.
Okay. If you arrive... Oh, sorry. It's sold out from 10:15 to 1 p.m. If you get there at 2:15, that's the sweet spot, it looks like. Or if you get there at 9:30 in the morning, but we will not be arriving at 9:30 in the morning. Cause
I mean, to be fair, I've never seen it at Christmas time. I've heard crazy good things about it.
I imagine it's pretty, if you're into that, pretty baller.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's... You know,
I just remember going to the Biltmore House as kids, and at some point, like, I was encouraged to ask the docents questions about rooms. Mostly, is that a trap door? Are there trap doors in this, or a secret door? Not trap doors, but like secret passageways, because there were a lot of secret passageways. So I'd constantly ask the people there, and they'd be like, "Yeah, that's it. Actually goes to the cloakroom or something." I'd be like, cool.
Wait, did you say you were encouraged to do that, or you felt
I feel like our mother encouraged me to do it, and at least on one visit, I asked people just endless amounts of stupid fucking questions, and they would always be very patient and answer me stuff. What is this for? I got really into that at least one visit to Biltmore House.
I think it's revisionist history that you're blaming our deceased mother for making you do
that. No, I'm not blaming her. I feel like that's something you should ask. Just ask them, and I'm like, okay. Which would not normally be my modus operandi, but for some reason I was...
Me neither. I'd be like, no, I'm not talking to strangers. I'm not talking to anybody. I
think once I got over the initial like fear of asking a stranger a question, and then I realized they'd just give me an answer, then I did it sort of ad nauseum. It might have been on a field trip or something. I don't know.
It's possible. By the way, solid use of docent. That's not a term you hear much anymore. You know, it's accurate,
though. You're not throwing the docent language around.
No. I just said it for the first time in 14 years.
Sure.
Docent.
No one makes sense.
Docent anymore. Yeah, it does.
Docent.
All right, Todd. So you guys are...
The Biltmore is
down.
Sold out from the 26th through the 29th, though. If you want tickets,
that
you
makes
gotta
sense.
Do 23rd through 25th or 30th and 31st.
Wait, are they open Christmas Day?
I guess so. That seems like a very odd time to visit Biltmore House.
Yeah.
Or as they call it now, just simply Biltmore. Tons of spots open. For some reason, there are zero spots left and open at 9:30 a.m. and at noon. And then in the afternoon. I guess that makes sense. If you're going to go on Christmas Day, you're going to want to go after like 2 because you're like, fuck, we open presents. What are we going to do the rest of the day?
Do the gifts and shit. Yeah, exactly. Well, in your case, watch NBA. But for most people, they don't want to do that. Or for a lot of people, I should say. Maybe not most people.
I mean, I'm honestly less interested this year, but there's a few games I wouldn't mind watching.
Are the Bucks playing?
I assume they are. I don't actually know. Let's look at the NBA schedule for Christmas Day as a little final note prior to Christmas Day. And this will this pod go up? Yes, before Christmas.
This will go up tomorrow.
Bucks, Knicks,
Bucks,
Warriors,
Knicks at noon.
Nuggets. That game will suck. Celtics, Lakers. That's got to be the prime draw of Christmas Day this year, I think.
That's why it's at 5 p.m. Yeah.
Mavericks, Suns. Who cares? And 76ers, Heat. Yeah, that'd be a good game too. Yeah, they got the timing right, I think, as far as like the two best games.
Yeah. You need to put it in the middle of the day so every coast can participate.
Yeah, the East Coast 10:30 start of Mavericks Suns is not going to get a lot of eyeballs.
Nobody's watching that shit. I mean, it's Durant versus Luka, but nobody's staying up that late.
I mean,
especially after a long Christmas.
Sorry, if we're going to talk about NBA one more time, it drives me crazy how everyone's like, Luka's amazing. I'm like, okay, he is an amazing player, but to me, he's shown nothing. Like, I guess they didn't make it to the final, the Western Conference Finals that one year, but like, it hasn't translated to any sustained success in the playoffs. I mean, they didn't fucking make the playoffs last year. Neither did the Blazers.
I was about to say, they melted. They had a complete meltdown. They brought Kyrie. You can't blame Kyrie for that exclusively.
No.
It's Luka's team. It's Luka's team.
I think the reason is because he's a fucking ball hawk.
He totally is. And he does too many heat checks.
That's how he gets the stats, and he's a great player, but
yeah.
There's five players on the team. It's not just Luka and the DuBois. I mean, it is, but that doesn't lead to sustained success.
No, clearly not, as we've seen from their lack thereof.
He's the most overrated player in the league to me. I don't like him.
He's going to be a perennial all-star for the next 10 years. So
yeah, because he's always going to put up numbers, and he can make amazing plays, but who cares?
Mark Cuban.
That's yeah. It. Although he's selling his majority stake in the Mavs.
I did see that. That kind of surprised
me. I don't really understand why. I haven't really heard much.
I don't either.
Other than he wants to sell it. Like maybe some bad investments in Shark Tank or something. I don't know why he's trying to get out of the game. He seems like such a participatory owner.
I think I saw a podcast, or I listened to a podcast, where he talked about two things you just mentioned. One, the Shark Tank thing. He says he's big time net negative on his investments in Shark Tank lifetime, which I'm shocking. Sure he actually is tracking it. Yeah, shocking indeed.
Here's some also. Some as seen on TV shit that we put on air every week. We give us $400 million to make it last for a year and a half and then flame out.
They never give him $400 million, but he did mention
sums, but yes,
not that big, but he did mention one of the reasons is, or this was before he'd announced it, but he said he's just getting sick of all the red tape stuff. Which I guess makes sense, like, especially him. He hates the rules and the regulations, and he's always been kind of a bad boy, you know, billionaire bad boys club or whatever. So I think he's just sick of it. I think he only put in like, as if it's not that much, like a quarter billion, $250 million, I think is what he bought the team for. It's worth like $3.5 billion.
Yeah.
So he's getting the return. He's just cashing out.
Buy another team. By a football team or something. I'm not a football team. I'm sure there are more, but
he's Dallas born and bred. But maybe he'll become an investor in the new Sonics team or whatever it's called, or the new Vegas LeBrons or whatever they're.
I don't think selling his entire chunk of.
He's selling his majority ownership stake. Was my understanding.
So he'll still be a partial owner.
He'll be a season ticket holder. He'll be there. He probably won't change what he's doing. He just won't have to face the music, so to speak, when shit.
I mean, honestly, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to buy his stake but have him still be the face of the franchise? I'd be like, no. If you're selling it to me, you got to get the fuck out of here.
We're
under new ownership. We're not having you like talk shit to the refs and do all the stuff that you do. Right. You got to get the fuck out.
I mean, I've heard different projections on what the next 5 to 10 years of the NBA is going to look like. But honestly, I think if you're buying a team right now, you might be buying at the peak. Like, how much more value? I'm sure people said that 10 years ago and 20 years ago. But
sure.
How much more value can NBA franchises have?
I mean, I think that number is going to continue to go up. It may not be as rapid, but it's.
It won't be as significant. Yeah.
As Simmons always says, there's 15X. Only 30, soon to be 32 billionaires to get to own those teams. So it's always going to be a limited. Sure. Quantity thing, so the rarity along with the expense. There's only maybe 50 people that can afford to do it. I don't know what the number is. There's only so many people that could afford to do it anyway. More so would have the interest in doing it. So you're in a very exclusive club, almost more exclusive than being in the NBA. Actually, probably is more exclusive than being in the NBA.
Far more exclusive, Don. Every team has 12 to 15 players. So
true.
But one owner. Well, typically one owner.
Sorry, I got the coughs. People.
Yeah, that mute button did not work on that one. If you tried. Yeah, pound the DC. It's after midnight. Let's get that caffeine.
There's just a swig left. I had to empty the.
Disappointing that you let a swig stay in there that long. What is it?
The reservoir. I thought I had emptied it already.
Clearly.
That's what she said.
Todd.
Yes.
Let's call it. We're 94 minutes in. Yeah, this I'll edit this tomorrow. I'm not working tomorrow, so I'll edit this and put it up tomorrow. So with that in mind, we wish all of our listeners a Merry Christmas and a happy Christmas. Holiday season. Whatever you celebrate, to our Jewish listeners, I hope your Festival of Lights was beneficial, and Shalom Shabbat. Yes, we hope
you had a happy holiday.
Chag Sameach. Whether
it's past or future.
Yeah, and we're happy you made it this far in the program. So there will be a show next week. Todd will be doing it from Studio C.
Yes.
And
expect diminished sound quality for my vocals, which I know everyone will hate.
With just some AirPods, which always sound like
just
shit.
Just remember my sweet, sweet sounds will be back in high def the week after.
Fear not. The sweet dulcet tones of Todd's baritone voice will be back with us in early 24 with new pods then as well. So, yeah. Any closing remarks, Todd?
Happy Christmas and Happy New Year.
I think so. Yes, both of those things.
And happy holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas.
Yes. Slide into our DMs here at the Bro Pod at @_bro_pod. That's on Instagram or X. You can also shoot us an email, thebropodnetwork@gmail.com. You can also check us out check us out at the website, bropodnetwork.com. That's where you can listen to past episodes and future episodes. Bookmark it, remember it, love it, tell a friend.
Like, subscribe.
Like, share, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications.
Ding, ding.
Share it with everyone in your family. Talk about it around the old Yule log, the Christmas tree, while you're roasting those fucking chestnuts.
When you're with your family, they're like, what have you been listening to? What podcasts have you been listening to that are definitely safe
only
and
one
appropriate for all ages? And you can
don't say that.
I don't know, but if you want a little more spicy hilarity.
I don't know, but after 8:30 p.m., let's put this shit on. That's right. They're rude, crude, and ready
cool
for
dudes.
Being cool dudes. It's
the worst rhyme I've ever heard.
Let's call it there.
Lost all
we
our
we thank you, as always, for listening, folks. And until next week, everybody.